It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The original version of the pamphlet titled You and the Police has been around the Pittsburgh area since the mid-1990s, when a black motorist named Johnny Gamage died at the hands of police during a traffic stop. Now, in the wake of recent incidents involving police officers and community members, particularly minority community members, an updated version of the brochure is appearing, and those who created it hope to see it distributed in public schools and churches across the city. I'm joined now in Studio A by those whose input inspired this reboot of the brochure. Tim Stevens is the founder of BPEP, the Black Political Empowerment Project. Tim Stevens, good to have you back with us.
Good to be here always. Thanks for having us.
Vic Volchek is the legal director of the Pennsylvania American Civil Liberties Union. Thank you for being here, Vic.
Oh, always my pleasure.
He's a great American.
And Beth Pittenger, who is executive director of the Citizens Police Review Board. Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh, Beth.
Thank you.
We'd like to hear from you at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email us at ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. How much will this updated You and the Police brochure help improve communication between police and the community? What else, if anything, do you think is needed? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Tim Stevens, we'll start with you. Why did you feel an update of the You and the Police brochure was needed?
I guess part of it goes back to my history of dealing with the issue of police brutality and the issues of community police relations going back to the late 60s, 70s, and up to this date. I had the opportunity to meet with the new chief of police a few months ago, soon after he came to Pittsburgh.
Cameron McClay.
And we met at our BPEP office, where I just came from, and up in the Hill at Freedom Unlimited, for about 2 hours. And I had sent him several documents in advance based on the work BPEP has been doing for the past number of years with regard to police issues, the Black Political Empowerment Project. And one of the things I sent him was the flyer that Vic Volchek and I worked on in the mid-90s, where we had several community meetings following the death of Johnny E. Gamage, which occurred October 12, 1995. From those community meetings, we produced a double-sided document, six panels, of what to do. When we've had so much attention to the issue of police and the issue of how the police operate with the community based on the national stories that were on our televisions across the nation over this summer, when I met with the new chief, I said, why don't we redistribute or consider reactivating and revising the brochure that we had out after Johnny E. Gamage? And as you know, we've had many incidents in Pittsburgh over the years since. And most recent, the Leon Ford Jr. case, where he was paralyzed in an incident being stopped by the police when driving. And, of course, the Jordan Miles case that happened, I believe it was January 12, 2010, which led to many demonstrations and many activities, and led also when representatives of BPEP took a walk with the kids from Kappa to City Council on January 26, 2010, to create a conversation with council, which led to four pieces of legislation. It took about three or so years to produce. Beth Pittenger and I decided one day that we probably were involved in about 21 meetings, I think, Beth, to finish that last piece of legislation.
Let me go back to the original brochure. And, mm-hmm. and you just cited a number of incidents that have happened in the 20 years since the Johnny Gamage incident. In the wake of that tragedy, mm-hmm. this brochure, the original You and the Police brochure, was mm-hmm. created, and then all these other things have happened. So if the if the original brochure wasn't as effective as it needed to be, mm-hmm. and I say that because of all these other incidents, the Leon Ford incident, among others that you just cited, that if that wasn't effective mm-hmm. originally, then why create a new one?
I think we didn't create a new one. We revised the old one. And I think in the last several months we've had, three or four revisions to come up with the one we are now. What has to happen is this document has to be utilized, has to be marketed everywhere possible. I just left a meeting with people from the Beltsuver community who committed just before I came here to market this document in the entire Hilltop community with all the various communities. We had a commitment from, Beth will tell you this, where she got a call from Washington, State of Washington. I got a call from Utah, believe it or not, a lieutenant of police force in Utah, who said, I want the flyer. I ran into an East Indian woman who lives in Pittsburgh who owns a business. She was so excited when she read the document. She said, this is, everything's in here. She is sending it out across the nation to our East Indian community partners across the 50 states.
What is exciting people about this brochure? What's in it that they're seeing that hasn't been addressed before?
There's some very logical, common sense things. And I want Beth and Vic to jump in whenever they want. But one of the things that happened the other day, I was in Meineke because I had forgotten to get my car inspected. I wrote it on my calendar, but I forgot. I went in for brakes, and the man said, do you realize your sticker is expired? I said, oh, my goodness. We just had the press conference.
A reason for someone to pull you over,
Absolutely. We just had the press conference that Monday of what to do when stopped by the police, and I was kidding with someone because I was raising money for our BPEP Jazz fundraiser, which is April 6th, Easter Monday, by the way, at the Wyndham University Center. But I said to him, I said, I'm here because my inspections, maybe we need to put into this flyer, how about having your car inspected? I called Beth Pittenger, who immediately put it in within hours, and this is in the document that you have in front of you. Sometimes it's just common sense stuff that sometimes you forget about. And then at the same event that I ran into the East Indian woman, I met a gentleman from University of Pittsburgh who said, how about not having your brake lights out? Broken tail lights. That is now in the document. So we just
or if a headlight's out, I think they can.
Well, headlights not a good thing at all.
But
any equipment violation.
Stickers. You can be driving and not realize that one of your headlights is out.
Oh, that's true.
And then updating the sticker is also a good idea. Vic, what went into the thinking behind this updated version of the brochure? What was the feeling behind why an update was needed?
Yeah, let me just back up a little bit. And you said that this brochure came out 20 years ago, and there have still been so many incidents.
Well,
there's no silver bullet. And no matter how good the brochure is and how wide a distribution you put out, it's not a guarantee that everything's just going to be hunky-dory. You're going to have misunderstandings. You're going to have some employees, like in any business, are not going to follow the rules or do the right thing. This is about trying to minimize those kind of negative interactions. And the thinking was that if people understood their rights – that they would be in a better position to try to minimize any kind of conflicts that they occurred. And what's really innovative about this brochure, and it was innovative 20 years ago and I think it still is now, is that it's not just here are your legal rights. It also includes responsibilities like, have your documents when you're driving, because if you want to give somebody, the police an excuse to arrest you or put you in jail or give you a citation, that's an easy way to do it.
Isn't this obvious?
Shouldn't it be obvious to people?
It's obvious in some sense, but it's common sense. But we don't always use common sense.
No, but there's things in here that people might not think of. Like if it's at nighttime and you get pulled over, put on your dome light, put your hands on top of the steering wheel. Don't reach into a glove compartment to get something. I mean, those are all things that people they may be doing it trying to be helpful. But you got to understand from a police officer's perspective, they don't know that. They don't know that you're not reaching for a gun. So a lot of this is just trying to hopefully if people are informed and they think about it in advance, that one tragedy may be avoided at some point.
Absolutely.
Beth, is there something in here that's different from what was in this brochure 20 years ago?
Oh, I think that the basic message is consistent to what was here before, but I think we've had a growth in community awareness of the tension between police and community. And this helps provide some direction to people who have maybe not as great exposure to their responsibilities and when they're in the community, whether they're walking around or they're driving. And it also lets the police know that there's an effort and this is what people are being told. So that when those encounters happen, and we have to, as Vic said, these are encounters between strangers. The police officer doesn't know anything about you when he or she pulls you over, nor do you. So antagonism has no place there. Attitude has no place there. But the fact that the Pittsburgh Public Schools are using this as an instructional tool in the classroom is very, very important because the young people are the ones who are most often exposed to this kind of an encounter that can go bad simply out of an unawareness of what to do. The teachers have taken an interest. Families have taken an interest. We actually had a UPS driver come into our office last week, and he didn't have a delivery for us. He just came in. He said, I need those brochures for my daughter and her friends. So the word of mouth is getting around.
Right.
People are interested. They're attuned to it. I think the national incidents that have occurred that have brought a lot of attention to that relationship between the community and police, it's getting the attention it deserves to keep everyone safe. And that's the board's interest in keeping everyone safe.
Well, are the chances of a misunderstanding between the police and a member of the minority community greater than those than the chances of a misunderstanding happening between a police officer and a white man or woman?
Yes. I'm gonna come right out and say yes, and there's two reasons for that. One is that you've got sort of this whole broken windows, quality of life enforcement where you've got police officers saturating largely poor communities of color in the city. So your chances for an interaction are way higher than if you live in a suburb or in some kind of affluent area. The second thing is, and I don't want this taken the wrong way, there is something called implicit bias out there. Most Americans suffer from that, which is that you have more negative associations when you're dealing with African Americans. I mean, this is common for white folks. It's common for African American folks. It may be something that is inconsistent with your stated beliefs, but it's out there. And you know, for a lot of police officers, there's a perception that if you see an African American standing on the street, you're going to have a different reaction. You're going to have different associations than if you see a white kid standing on the corner. And that does result in African Americans being treated differently. All you got to do is look at the statistics.
Right. And this is not a surprising answer. And as I asked the question, I felt almost as though I was asking a rhetorical question. So if this is the case, then how does one brochure address the issues of a diverse community, which Pittsburgh is?
It's, as we said earlier, no one brochure is going to solve it. I think one of the most significant things about this reissue, which is not something we've touched on, is that the police department worked with us on this. And that's attributable to Cameron McClay, attributable to the new command staff that he's got in there. When we put this out 20 years ago, the first time, the police were livid and the FOP had to go out and put out their own brochure. There was no possibility of us being able to work together. So not to say that the problems are fixed, but I think that those of us in the civil rights community, and maybe I'm just speaking for me, we have a good perception of the new police chief and the direction that the police are going in. I think he's got good ideas. He's got the right ideas. He understands where the problems are. And we are cautiously optimistic. And this is part of trying to develop a working relationship with the police where we're all working together to try to minimize the violence, to try to minimize negative interactions between the police and the community and improve the communities of color perspective and perception of the police. We need more police officers of color. And, so many people in the minority communities are disaffected and afraid of the police because they don't like the way they've been treated. They don't want to apply. We got to turn that around.
And what's been the input from the community and particularly the minority community, which you sampled as you updated this brochure? What are people in the community telling you?
We just keep getting requests. I was talking to one of my former vice presidents of the NACP from the Rankin community, and she wants to get, I think, 200 of these for the Rankin community. Even though we have Pittsburgh numbers on it, Beth can tell you how she personalized the document for a community she went to, because most of the points in here, almost all of the points, are generic in the sense they could apply in any neighborhood, any community, any city, any county, or any commonwealth, for that matter, state. But we're getting we got a request just today, as I said before I came here, for the Belt-Suver community. We got a call for another call this week from someone who wants at least 200 or 400 of these, because they were still waiting for the Beth has been kind enough to help get these things printed. We keep getting calls, and that's a good sign, because when people read this, even though it's only two pages, six panels, it's complete with great detail. And I'd like us, before we go off the air, to actually read some of these so people can get a sense. And Beth has it up on her website. We're gonna ask various – we're updating our BPEP website, mm-hmm. but we're going to be asking various organizations and agencies to put this brochure up on their website as another way of communicating to a wider range of people, thousands of people, to have access to this important document.
I guess what I want to get at, though, is what – as you were deciding how to update this, mm-hmm. what were people in the community saying – this is what our children are not aware of, or this is what even we as adults are confused about that needs to be clarified.
Well, I think, Paul, it's not so much about what's updated as the fact that the sort of targeted, intentional distribution of this brochure and this information and this discussion has kind of waned since the 1990s.
Absolutely.
And, we filed this brochure was actually inspired by a lawsuit that the ACLU filed in 1996. We sued 10% of the police officers, and we didn't want to just be negative out there just, filing the lawsuit. Which actually led to a consent decree with the Justice Department and all sorts of reforms. We wanted to do something positive to try to build relations. Things got better for a while mm-hmm. during that consent decree and after that consent decree. In the last, 7-8 years, things have sort of gone backwards, and we are seeing more police misconduct complaints. We're seeing more severe complaints. We're not back, I don't think, to the levels that we were at in the early to mid-1990s, but we were headed in that direction. And we just said, look, especially after Ferguson and the national discussion right. that's generated, we need to do this again. We need to get these discussions going on. And it's right. not just the uniqueness of the information. Somebody who looks at this will have a discussion with somebody else.
Correct.
Just talking about these issues and thinking about them in advance could save your life.
The excitement that Nina Esposito Viscaitis said when I talked to her on the phone about this and then emailed it to her. She's the head of the PFT, the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers. She immediately said, she was enthused about this, said, I want to email this to every teacher without hesitation. She came to our press conference. We were all in the press conference together.
And she was saying it because she was seeing that kids, school-age kids,
yes.
don't get – they're not understanding
right.
what they need to do.
And she felt this to be a preventative piece of medicine in terms of the relationship between the community and the police. Her vice president was present. Her board member was present at the press conference. Beth can share her conversation with about 150 teachers from the social studies classes and courses in the city of Pittsburgh and what Mike Drager, who coordinates them, has committed to do.
Beth, why don't you give us a quick comment before we go to break here, and we will take calls, and we do have a caller, at least one waiting on the line we'll get to. But Beth, as far as just the community input that you have heard.
We've had tremendous reception to it, and that's why we've customized the back panel of this. It's available for download so that anywhere can put their own numbers on that back panel following those topics, like important phone numbers for the prosecutors, the lawyers, the police, the prosecutors in jail, where to file complaints in your local neighborhood, and that sort of thing. And that entire back panel can be accommodating to any neighborhood. I did that down in Mon Valley. They put all of the Westmoreland and Washington County numbers back there, and it distributed this. There's no pride in ownership here. We're giving this to the community at large to use it as they see fit. The social studies teachers, I've been to a couple of classrooms, they have swallowed this up whole. They love it. It's initiating conversation in their classroom with their students that they've not had the vehicle to initiate the conversation with previously. Our social studies, our civics training, all of those things that maybe we remember, mm-hmm. that has changed. The kids are not being exposed to the same level of discussion, interaction, and expectation. This provides the rights, the responsibilities, and the reality, so that we're addressing the relationship as well between an individual and a police officer.
And on the back of the brochure is an acknowledgement this is not complete advice. Be sure to consult a lawyer.
Yes.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we're talking about the pamphlet titled You and the Police. It's been around for some 20 years, and now there's an updated version out, and the folks behind it are with us in Studio A talking about how this can help smooth out relationships between the members of the police force in Pittsburgh and the community at large. Tim Stevens, founder of BPEP, the Black Political Empowerment Project, is with us, along with Vic Volchak, legal director of the Pennsylvania American Civil Liberties Union, and Beth Pittenger, executive director of the Citizen Police Review Board. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We'll continue the conversation on Essential Pittsburgh here on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about the updated pamphlet, You and the Police. It's been around for 20 years since the Johnny Gamage incident. Johnny Gamage, a black motorist who died at the hands of police tragically during a traffic stop back in 1995. In the wake of that, this pamphlet was created, and now in the wake of recent incidents involving police officers and community members, an updated version of the brochure is appearing, and we're talking with the folks who have created it, both the original and the updated version. Tim Stevens, founder of BPEP, Black Political Empowerment Project. Mm-hmm. Also, Vic Volchak, the legal director of the Pennsylvania American Civil Liberties Union, and Beth Pittenger, executive director of the Citizen Police Review Board. The number is 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email at ESS. PGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Let's go to the phones and take a call from Cody in the East End. Cody, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, how are you doing? I just wanted to make the comment that I think it's a pretty sad reality that we have to give our children flyers to deal with police. You know, we're basically telling them that if, you know, a police can't see their hands, that there's a possibility of them getting shot. Police are public servants, and shouldn't have the ability to freaking kill whoever they want or beat you up for not being able to see your hand.
Well, we don't disagree with you, but then there's our subtitle is reality. What is it? Rights, responsibility, and reality. The truth of the matter is, unfortunately, most of the police officers I run into are very respectful. But unfortunately, as in any business or any profession, there are people who should not be in that profession. We want people to come out of any interaction with the police unbeaten, unarrested, and certainly not killed. One of the things we did this time, and I want to commend again Cameron McClay, when we met with him, he immediately agreed with remarketing this brochure. Within days, he had Commander Rochelle Brackney call me, and she began to read the old document. We had input from Commander Eric Holmes, who's now moved up a bit in the structure, and the commander himself, or the chief himself, reviewed the brochure. We had input from David Harris, the professor at the University of Pittsburgh, who's at this mic frequently at WESA, as well as Vic Volchak and Beth Pittenger and I and others as we reviewed this thing. One of the things we did was take off the picture that was on the original. The original version had a picture of wrists in handcuffs. The former police chief, Nate Harper, and the present police chief, when I met with him on this, he said, could we change the picture? And Vic and I and Beth, we went through different pictures, and we decided to have no picture. Why? Because whatever picture you use sent a certain message. The reason why the former police chief and the current police chief said, can we have something other than handcuffs, because it looks like every interaction ends up with somebody in handcuffs. So the truth of the matter is every interaction does not end up in handcuffs and does not end up in a beating or a negative interaction. So we're trying to create a document that's reality-based, knowing that Leon Ford, for instance, Leon Ford Jr., in a case that I personally advocated that his charges not be refiled, and others did. APA, Brandy Fisher, and others. And the DA had the wisdom in the end to not refile.
Yes,
the charges. Why do I bring that up? Well, I truly, and this is not a knock at Leon Ford Jr., I want to be clear about this, but if he were familiar with the contents of this brochure, he would not be paralyzed today. The police violated procedures, and Beth, can, if she wants, can comment on that, and that stopped. But if Leon Ford had known the contents of this document, he would have turned his car off. He would have put his hands up on, as Vic said, the wheel, the steering wheel, or put his hands on the side of the car at the window near the officers, and he would not be paralyzed today. Just something simple as turning the car off. That means you're not going to try to run off. There's no question at that point. Simple things like that. What we're trying to do is prevent. We're not saying there aren't bad police officers out there. Obviously there are. But hopefully, in my experience, is most of the officers are, as I said, very respectful. But in any profession, there are folks that need not be there.
And but there are the problems, and there are misunderstandings, and
absolutely,
that's what Cody was talking about. He said if indeed we've got issues, and Vic, we were talking about this in the break. I mean, what's really going on out there when, in some instances, not all, but in some instances, when police are stopping younger people, which this brochure clearly is aimed at school age kids, and particularly kids who are members of the minority community.
Yeah, you know, we have a representative client, Dennis Henderson, who's a teacher who was involved in a very negative incident in the East End, and you know, Dennis is a professional, he's respected in the community, and he had a negative interaction
leaving a community meeting
right, discussing police community relations, and he ends up in handcuffs, ends up spending the night in jail, and then all the charges get dismissed, and we filed a lawsuit, and he has observed that if this happens to him. If the same kind of interaction happens with somebody who's, you know, 16 to 25, mm-hmm, right, where you've got maybe less self-control, less self-esteem, if you have a police officer who comes up and is harassing you, is disrespecting you, it's really hard to control yourself. And the minute you lose that control, that gives them a justification, an excuse to sort of ramp things up. So one of the most important messages that we originally designed the brochure to get out, and it has to be stressed again now, and is part of the reality we're discussing, is that there are unfortunately going to be occasions where police do something wrong, right? I mean, it as Tim says, it happens in any profession. If that happens, if the police are violating your rights, even if you are absolutely certain that what they're doing is wrong, you are never going to win that interaction on the scene. Go along, get along. Path of least resistance, and then there are all sorts of mechanisms to be able to address that after the fact. If you try to address it on the scene, if you resist, you could be dead.
And Beth Pittenger, this is something that one of your members, board members of the Citizens Police Review Board, Sheldon Williams, mentioned in our Police Community Relations Forum back in October, that and this brochure highlights that you cannot, as Vic just explain, win on the scene.
No, you have to suck it up. You have to suck it up right then and there.
Which is
and
a hard thing for kids to understand.
It's very difficult to do. Yeah. We understand that. But that's part of the message here.
It's part of the reality.
That at any moment when you're dealing with a police officer, they have more power at that moment than anybody else in the world over you. Mm-hmm. More power than any judge has over you at that moment. Mm-hmm. You just deal with it. Let it go. Don't touch the cop. Don't run from the cop. Don't fight with the cop. Don't argue. You're not going to win. You could deal with it later. You can file a complaint. In fact, Vic mentions Mr. Henderson's case. The board held a public hearing on that and recommended that a particular officer be terminated. He wasn't, but we reviewed that thoroughly.
But and he did get some discipline, and there was some kind of retraining there, and there was a lawsuit, and there was redress through the lawsuit. So yeah, that's the fact.
And what Cody mentioned about, you know, somebody not showing their hands. On the other side of that, that is a huge safety risk for an officer.
It is.
And so, it is important that we always show our hands.
And so part of this, too, is to get across to kids what is in the mind of the police as they're approaching you. Adam on Twitter asks, implicit bias is born out of the fact that our police force is overwhelmingly Caucasian. How do we change this? Vic, you mentioned we need more black and minority and just more diversity on the police force in Pittsburgh.
Well, the ACLU in 2012 filed a lawsuit against the city of Pittsburgh, class action lawsuit alleging that there is systemic race discrimination in hiring. We have been in settlement negotiations now for almost 2 years, and so I can't really talk about what's going on in settlement because that's confidential. I mean, we are cautiously optimistic that we will be able to make some changes. But ultimately, it's a chicken and the egg kind of situation. Until the folks in communities of color start to respect the police and want themselves to become part of that force, mm-hmm. it's going to be really hard to recruit folks and get them in there. And you know, that actually requires a change in behavior by the police. And I do think that Chief McClay understands that and is moving in that direction. But that's going to take years.
Let's take a call from David in Manassas, who's been waiting for a while to get in on the conversation. Go ahead, David. You're on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say that I find the issue of quote-unquote implicit bias to be extremely irresponsible for someone to say over the radio, because all that does is create more racism. It's not black or white. It's not you versus me. It's people thinking that other people are out there versus them. That's not what this is. I think that it's irresponsible for someone to say that, and not to mention the fact that your caller just said that he doesn't think that people in other communities don't respect the police. I find that to be very irresponsible as well. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate the sentiments, and obviously we respect your freedom of speech. But I've got to disagree with you, and I'm not sure that the caller has a real understanding of what implicit bias is. I would direct you to the Kirwan Institute at Ohio State. They've got some literature that you can read about this. But implicit bias, again, it's something that is unconscious, subconscious. And when I do the tests, and there are tests that you can take, I have this bias against African Americans. A slight bias is what it shows. I've dedicated my life to civil rights and fighting against discrimination, but I still, you know, have some of these negative associations. And as opposed to explicit bias, mm-hmm. the way to fight implicit bias is to talk about it. The fact that that people can be treated differently and that skin color does matter. It's huge, and I couldn't disagree more. To deal with implicit bias, it's got to become part of the conversation.
It's reality. I was in the preliminary hearing on Jordan Miles, along with a couple of our Black Political Empowerment Project partners. And I turned to them and I said, did you hear what he just said? One of the officers who was involved in the beating of Jordan Miles actually said before the magistrate something to the effect, and I wish I had his actual words, something to the effect, when we see an African-American male in Homewood walking the streets after 9 o'clock, we basically assume he's up to no good. Now, what is that? And this is a white officer. So what is that? You have to be real. When people say, I don't see race, they're lying. They may be lying to themselves. If I'm in a room with all black people and a person who walks in who's obviously white, and I say obviously because some people you're not sure who they are. If you're in a room of all white people and a person who walks in who's obviously black, you know a black person walked in. The black people know a white person walked in. It doesn't mean you have to make that as a problem, but it's real. People see race. And until we accept that, how are you going to get to the problem? I appreciate the fact that the new police chief immediately said, let's work on this, and had an African-American commander, two commanders who were African-American, help work on this. Because this is how it gets resolved. You don't get resolved by sticking your head in the sand. You see where the sand is, and you deal with it. And that's what we're trying to do. And the fact that we are creating an opportunity collectively. We had police input into this thing. We had community input into this thing. We have the school system behind this thing. We have community
partners. The
brochure. The brochure. And Beth, please tell us where people can get this online.
Let's make sure we get to that before we wrap up. But I you mentioned the Jordan Miles situation. Now, here is something that was an unusual situation. Unfortunately, it wasn't unique, but it was unusual in that here is a young man who's walking in his neighborhood from one relative's
from his mother's house to his
right, grandma's. Right, from one relative's house to another house, and the police stop. They are plainclothes police, and I don't know if I don't know too many people who would necessarily take someone who's not wearing a uniform at their word that they are the police and would stop. And Jordan Miles obviously didn't and was beaten as a result of that. So kids see this situation. Is this something, you know, what is there to be learned from this? And is this something that this brochure covers? Because I'm wondering if it really does.
Yeah, I mean, I want to quibble with one of the things you said is that was a unique and unusual situation. What was unique and unusual, fortunately, is that not that many people get beaten to that extent. But we've got a number of incidents all across the country where you've got, you know, young black males who have been shot. I mean, think Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old in
Cleveland.
In Cleveland, you know, is pretty outrageous. What happened,
what I'm saying, Vic, about the unique nature of this was that these cops were plainclothes cops.
Yes, but it's what I'm saying is that's not unique. That is because you've got saturation policing in Homewood, in the Hill District, in these predominantly communities of color that are largely low income and poor. And these kinds of interactions where, I mean, the police should not, I mean, you know, why are they harassing somebody? Why are they assuming that, you know, a black male walking down the street, not doing anything, minding his own business, deserves to be questioned and harassed? I mean, if that happened in Shadyside or Oakland or Squirrel Hill, I dare say, one, the police probably wouldn't even be there. But if they were, they wouldn't have engaged with that individual. They may have monitored from their cars from a distance, but they wouldn't have gone out and confronted. And that reality for people who live in those communities, that is a reality for them every single day. And it is not unique. It is the norm, and we need to have a community discussion about whether or not the police should be engaged in that kind of quality of life policing, stop and frisk, broken windows, whatever you call it, where you saturate the community and you use any excuse you can to question people and see whether they have drugs and guns.
And I think Chief McClay has made an effort to change that culture, that those values that drove that culture.
Go ahead, Beth.
No, I was just going to highlight a board hearing last fall about a young man who was 1:30 in the morning walking down the street out, I think it was in Lawrenceville area. Plainclothes officers jumped out, same scenario, identified him in their paperwork as an African-American. He wasn't. And he got punched. They had no ID, according to him. There was a public hearing. The chief hasn't responded to the board's findings yet, so I can't comment further on that. But it was a public hearing. And it was very, very similar circumstances. On the other hand, you have Leon Ford, who did everything right. He had the paperwork. He gave his license. Everything was current.
Correct.
And he was still ends up the way he ended
paralyzed.
Up, which was the officer's misconduct.
Yeah, procedural violations.
Yes.
And again, if he had the brochure in his mind, he probably wouldn't be paralyzed. That's how powerful this document is. And I do want to say before we run out of time, and there we are, that what's the website that you can go to?
It's on the Citizen Police Review Board website, which is one word, cprbpgh.org.
And we'll put a link to that website at our website, wesa.fm. Let's go to Rick on Route 51, take a couple more calls here. Rick, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with Tim Stevens, Vic Volchak, and Beth Pittenger.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My name's Rick. I live in Brighton Heights, and Beth made a very interesting point that I thought was really good. You know, she said, we can remember back when we were young and we were taught civics and social studies and those kinds of things. Now, I would think that might be a good way to go, is to reinstitute these back into the schools, especially civics, because it teaches us what we are to expect from our government, and it also teaches our government should do for us, along with us working and to do for our government. I think that would be a good direction to head in. What do you think?
This is Tim Stevens. You may have missed our information that we mentioned that Beth Pittenger had met with about 150 teachers from the social studies programs of Pittsburgh Public Schools, And matter of fact, Mike Drager was at the press conference representing the school district, as was Erica Fairby Jones, as was the president of the union, PFT, Nina Esposito Vasquez, and her vice president and board member. This thing is going to be marketed throughout the public schools, and we hope other school systems will pick it up. And they are literally discussing the brochure within those social studies classes so that the kids will understand the meaning of this document. Simple things such as don't complain or tell the police that they're wrong if you're in a situation, that you will file a complaint. In other words, instead, remember the officer's names, badge numbers, or the patrol car numbers if you can't see the badge number. Write down everything you can remember as soon as you can. Memories fade quickly. Try to find witnesses. Try to get their names and email addresses and phone numbers. And if you're injured, take photographs while the injuries are recent. Get medical attention. Tell the doctor what happened and so forth and so on. So when you have a negative interaction, you have some evidence of what happened. But also when you have an interaction, that you don't badmouth the police. Vic comments on this oftentimes. You have the legal right to badmouth a police officer legally, in our Constitution. But we, from the reality side, it's not a good idea.
Right.
Am I right, Vic?
And Vic made that very clear earlier. Let's take one last call from Richard on the north side. Richard, go ahead. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I really respect Vic and Tan and Ms. Pittinger in terms of the tremendous effort they put into amplifying and being protectors of citizens' rights.
Thank you.
I, though, want to ask a question specifically about the parity of the City of Pittsburgh Police. We cannot wait another 20 years. We cannot dust off old tools and believe that we're going to have new answers. The answer is a power relationship. And the problem is that we cannot control how the police union constructs barriers to entry for new candidates. And we cannot wait for the power relationship to change that they think the police have such authority over citizens of this city. All of that has to change. And those are the kinds of things that it's not necessarily the popularity of a new police chief. Mm-hmm. It's really the dynamic of what is the end game of respect to citizens of the city. Those are the things that have to change, and it cannot wait with bits of structural change. It has to be totality of changing the power relationship.
Unfortunately, Rich, we've had what I call a rewhitening of the police force in Pittsburgh since the Weber consent decree ended, and the last 15 classes or so have been in single digits in terms of color, sometimes no digits. And Vic Volchek and ACLU is trying to resolve that, and they've been working for it, as he said, 2 years to do so. I think we need a new consent decree to be truthful, because the incremental change will not produce the significant number of black people we need and Hispanics on the police force. It's not going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately. But while we have a very predominantly white force now in a 27% black community or black city of Pittsburgh, we have to do what we're doing in terms of having the community police conversations we've had with the chief of police, having this document, other things that are happening to have a new relationship created.
And we'll have a link at our website, WESA.FM, to what is in the new version of You and the Police, the new You and the Police pamphlet that has been updated, and the folks who are responsible for that have been in our studio talking about it. Tim Stevens, whom you just heard, who is with the Black Political Empowerment Project. He's the founder of BPEP. Also, Vic Volchak, legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union, and Beth Pittinger, executive director of the Citizens Police Review Board. Thanks to you all for being here.
Don't forget BPEP Jazz Monday, 5:30 to 6:30, Wyndham, the Holiday Inn.
Got it, Tim.
6 hours.
Coming up on this April Fool's Day, we'll look at the Pittsburgher who was known as the world's greatest liar. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's April Fool's Day, and rather than fall into the trap of presenting a fake news story and have it blow up in our face, we're inviting pop culture contributor Joe Woese in to tell us the story of Joseph Mulhattan, a Pittsburgher who in the late 1800s and early 1900s became known as the world's greatest liar. His wild, fabricated stories were reprinted worldwide and caused a stir. He even fooled P.T. Barnum. Joe Woese, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh, and happy April Fool's Day.
Same to you. Thanks, as always.
Joe, on mic two there. So there you are.
All right.
We think of satire and fake news as a modern Facebook invention, but the early 20th century was filled with news hoaxes. How are these earlier hoaxes different than the ones today?
Well, I think the one thing they have in common is trust. The only way you can pull a hoax is to have sort of that just undying trust. So newspapers, you know, had that in that era. The internet never had that. We've known from the beginning not to trust the internet, and yet we still fall for these things. And
radio had it too, right? That's how people fell for War of the Worlds.
Radio had trust. The internet has never had trust. What the internet does have is we trust each other. And all it takes is one person to repost something on their Facebook, and then that person posted it to 10 more people, 100 people, 1,000 people, and before you know it, it's gone quite literally viral. That's the difference. Whereas before it was everybody picked up the newspaper and read it, now it's one person finds a story and then just circulates it through all their friends.
Who were the some of the prominent newspaper hoaxers?
I think some of the ones you think of, Mark Twain, who came up with this story of a petrified man that in the story he describes the petrified man literally thumbing his nose, which was meant to sort of thumb the nose at his editor and the public. One that's oft repeated is H.L. Mencken, who actually did a story about the first bathtub. My history teacher repeated that story, and I've heard from kids today, my own children who have heard that story repeated as true. Complete myth. And then my favorite, Ben Franklin, who pulled off several hoaxes throughout his year, including a very controversial one where he portrayed, wrote a story as if he was a woman who had been convicted of having a child out of wedlock. And it was really a social commentary on how men got away with this while women were persecuted. So he used it for a good cause.
Very interesting. Now, you suggest that Joseph Mulhattan, a native Pittsburgher, rises above the rest. What makes him stand out?
He was just so prolific. Every town he visited, he was a traveling salesman. Every town he visited, he created a new story for it. And these were getting out there. He was fooling people worldwide. There was a certain amount when you had Mark Twain or Edgar Allan Poe telling a story, there was automatically this level of disbelief to it because they were known as fiction writers. Mulhattan was just this traveling salesman who would make up these wild, wild stories with just enough plausibility to make people believe it.
What were some of his hoaxes?
He had so many. He had one about cows that were committing suicide. He had more reasonable ones of meteors crashing to the earth, and thousands of people poured into the small town in Texas, including reporters, to look for this meteor that was protruding from the ground, and they couldn't go back. The reporters, some of them actually settled in. One opened up a saloon. Others, you know, began working because they couldn't go back to England and New York because they were just so embarrassed.
And what – so people fell for this stuff. What made him so successful? How did he convince people to believe his hoaxes?
He was a very honest man in his business dealings. He had a very natural charm. So reporters loved him. Editors loved being taken by him, so much so that editors would make up stories and attribute them to Mulhattan. It gave them plausible deniability.
And what happened to Joseph Mulhattan, the native Pittsburgher?
Well, sadly, he actually died in Arizona before dying again in New Orleans, and then dying once more in Texas before finally dying in Arizona. And they wrote a beautiful, beautiful obituary about his life, and that obituary was written by Joseph Mulhattan. So as far as we know, he may still be out there.
So he was faking his own death?
He faked his own death several times.
And apparently lived to tell about it.
And lived to tell the tale.
Joe Woese is our culture contributor talking about the great hoaxers on this April Fool's Day. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Happy April Fool's Day, everyone. Be careful out there. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.